And again, just to explore the clinical context in which this sort of trial sits, the other obvious aspect is the intraperitoneal therapy. And I'm curious, at Memorial, in your own practice, for example, where IP therapy fits in outside of a protocol setting, and what you think is going on across this country, both in tertiary centers and the community, in terms of its use?
Well, I have the good fortune to practice at Memorial Hospital. And what that means is I have the access to really highly qualified surgeons who know how to place catheters. We have a low complication rate below 3%. I practice with some extraordinary nurses who have a lot of experience administering IP chemotherapy. And the administration of IP chemotherapy tends to be more of a nursing problem than a physician problem, in all truth. You know, the physician writes the order and deals with some of the side effects, but the delivery of intraperitoneal therapy requires genuine nursing skill. And I think that if one looked across the country and said, why are people not doing this? I think there are two main reasons. And one of the main reasons is that cisplatin is a more toxic drug than carboplatin, and we don't really have good data to say that carboplatin is a good drug for intraperitoneal administration. And that's the first reason. And the second reason is that when you do intraperitoneal therapy, it takes more time in the chemotherapy suite. The patients really need to be able to lie down. And it takes a lot of nursing time and a lot of nursing skill. And not all places, particularly outside of major centers, really have the wherewithal to provide that kind of support. So I think those are both genuine barriers. I think that we all got spoiled with the carboplatin because carboplatin is much easier to give than cisplatin. Those of us who are a little older remember when cisplatin was the only choice and we learned how to give cisplatin relatively safely with the modern antiemetics, aprepitant, and the 5-HT3 blockers. The nausea can be well controlled, but it takes more effort on everybody's part. And I think that, to me, if I look at the three studies, there's no doubt that it's worth it for a patient trying to get curative treatment. And so we, both on protocol, Dr. Connor's protocol is the one that we're currently doing for upfront optimally debulk patients with ovarian cancer using the bevacizumab and the IP cisplatin. But also for my patients off clinical trial who perhaps might not be eligible for bevacizumab for some contraindication, I still would very much like to have them get the benefit of intraperitoneal treatment. And I do treat patients off protocol with intraperitoneal chemotherapy.
What are the situations where you might think twice about doing that, and particularly, I guess, if you think about an older patient or one with comorbidities?
Yeah, I think that one has to look at the patient, and I think the complications of IP cisplatin tend to be neuropathy. There's more nausea associated with that kind of a program. The patient is more likely to need hydration, to waste magnesium and potassium. And so patients with cardiac disease where hypomagnesemia and hypokalemia might be dangerous would be a population I wouldn't want to treat with intraperitoneal cisplatin. I'd like to avoid treating patients with a pre-existing neuropathy from diabetes or some other underlying problem. Someone with a significant hearing loss at baseline would be someone else who cisplatin would not be a good choice.